call the meeting to order. We're a little bit late, but we're giving people a little lead time because we know we had a little room snafu here. But we need to get started, and we want to go through the final omnibus bill here and give a chance to hear from the public and then also have a chance for any members to discuss the bill. What I'm going to do is I'm going to chair from here and start by moving the delete everything amendment, the DE7 amendment, which puts the bill in the order I would like it. And I guess we're still waiting a little bit here. Okay. We'll probably, I want to tell you what the differences in the bill are, first of all. Members, as you recall, the last time when we met, we had four placeholder amendments in this bill for transfers that we were asked to take from the Department of Human Services. And so what's happened in this DE7 amendment is that we have recalculated the dollars and put them in. I just want to go briefly through them, maybe starting at the back so you can see where the transfers went. So on line 8.9 on page 8, the first one is $900,000 each year for the homeless supportive services. And members, we are going to have testimony from the public, and I know this is the one, we'll be hearing that the one. The next one is for the transitional housing programs. That's $250,000. That one's actually staying the same, as is the emergency services, $250,000. The other two that are more significant jump in funding is the $1.5 million each year, in other words, $3 million to provide housing and services to homeless youth, and under the existing statute. And the other is to develop $1 million each year, in other words, $2 million to develop and provide housing and shelter for trafficked women and children. And all of those five programs are ones that Department of Human Services usually would be providing out of their budget. We were asked to pick it up, and so that's what we have done there. And as a result, we needed to reduce some of the other funding that we had in the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency that you have all been working so hard to help us develop over the last year. And if you look at the spreadsheet, you can see the differences. And let me just very briefly say, in the Challenge Fund, we still have a 47% increase over the base, and again, this is base funding. We're keeping this, so this is still progress. In Housing Trust Fund, it's a 21.5% increase. This is for this next biennium. In Family Homeless Prevention Assistance, 7.7% increase. Home Ownership Assistance Funds.
Madam Chair.
Representative Pertas.
Thank you. Could you maybe hold your head up when you're speaking rather than down, or bring the mic down and maybe slow down just a little bit, because it just really sounds like you're mumbling and I can't understand what you're saying.
Okay. You want me to start over with those numbers?
You don't have to start over, but okay. Thank you.
Okay. So for the Home Ownership Assistance Fund, it's a 6% increase over what we had before. Affordable Rental Investment, this is the one that where, again, we have a reallocation. So the first number, we're reducing it, but then it's later on increased. So the increased total for the rental rehabilitation program is 36.5% on the rental, and then the whole part is 148%. The homeownership education counseling and training is 7.7% increase, and capacity building 93% increase, and then the four ones that I just went over are the new ones. So that's basically what the amendment did, and I think we have enough people here now we can vote. So I'd like to move the adoption of the amendment. Any discussion? Not all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. Motion prevails. So now we have the bill in the form that we can work with today, and we'll be taking testimony. There's a couple small changes. I wanted to just indicate I appreciate having a chance to meet both with the DFL members of this committee and the Republican members of this committee. Representative Hertas, one of the things that you wanted me to do was to indicate in the East African Women's Shelter that the housing would be available to all. And you can find that language on line 7.32 and 7.33, that it would be serving other victims of domestic violence as well. And I think that's the only real specific change that I need to point out to you right now. I'd like to have a chance for the community members, the advocates who've worked so hard on all the different parts of this bill, to come forward. And as we do, we'll be hearing from them, and you'll have a chance to participate in a conversation with them, too. Okay. So the first person we have is, and we're going to try to go, members, I think, until about, we're going to do about a half an hour. Yeah, about a half an hour for public testimony. And everybody signed up. If you haven't signed up, please do sign up. But let me know. Let us know up here through the pages if you need to testify or want to testify. So the first person is Jeff Washburn from City of Lakes Community Land Trust. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. I appreciate the opportunity to come before the committee, and incredibly appreciative of the work of the committee and working toward the support of the Homes for All work. As you may recall, I had the opportunity to come and talk about community land trusts in early February with the committee, and so I won't get into the details of our work, but in short, my name is Jeff Washburn with the City of Lakes Community Land Trust. I'm also the chair of the Minnesota CLT Coalition, which represents 10 community land trusts across the state. And together we've been able to serve over 1,000 low and moderate income homeowners and able to assist them into achieving sustainable, affordable home ownership in the state. Our work is part of a much larger continuum and really important to the funding that is supported through the state, and I guess my continued urging for us to look for ways to continue to fund not only community land trust, but more importantly, the continuum of housing is really important. We found that it's really difficult for us to help position households into affordable, sustainable, responsible home ownership if they're not well prepared, and part of that process looks all the way back in the housing continuum to ensure that we're helping folks all the way along that process. So thank you for that support. In particular, the Challenge Fund has been incredibly helpful to community land trusts across the state for at least the past decade, and specifically our ability to serve community of color households at a rate at close to twice the rate of the state of Minnesota is something that I know is called out in the current language, which is incredibly helpful to us as we continue to dig deeper into the community to create ownership opportunities for all Minnesotans. Additionally important, and specifically to myself and our organization, is the call out for American Indian home ownership opportunities and housing opportunities. As you're aware, Madam Chair, we're doing some work with Little Earth in your district, and creating those ownership opportunities within the community is very, very important. Additionally, there, as you all are aware, there is language supporting community land trusts. We do believe that through the community land trust model, our ability of not only creating affordability, but through the model of ensuring long-term affordability and supportive home ownership for homeowners is incredibly important to the way that we do housing in the state, and it very much mirrors what supportive rental and mm-hmm. rental providers do provide in the state. Lastly, while not specifically called out, as our organizations focus on not only helping households purchase homes, but making sure that we're there to support homeowners long term, that ability for us to be able to access capacity funds, while it hasn't happened, at least over the past decade, would be incredibly helpful to community land trusts as we not only look at helping more households achieve home ownership, but ensuring that they are successful in home ownership would be greatly appreciated. We, like the others in the Homes for All campaign, Community Land Trust, similar to our work with Habitat for Humanity in the state, is really trying to create a bridge for folks that don't have the wherewithal to be able to jump from a rental housing situation into full-blown home ownership. And again, the support of the state, our ability to help bridge households is greatly appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you. Any comments, questions from committee members? Representative Schumacher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the testifier, I understand that your program works with contract for deed programs. That's part of how you operate. And here's that, correct?
I can speak to our organization, the City of Lakes Community Land Trust, and from what I can tell, I believe we may be the only community land trust in the state currently that does have a contract for deed program on some of the community land trust homes. So at our point in time, I think there's 18 homeowners who currently have homes through a contract for deed program. And we are working with organizations who you'll hear from in a moment, Build Wealth Minnesota, who provides a credit enhancement and financial literacy that is tied to that contract for deed to ensure that homeowners are moving forward and will be able to responsibly refinance into a mortgage.
Okay, and one follow-up, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the testifier, with that, I know there was some changes that have been made in policy this year that came through this committee on the contract for deed stuff, and as you look at that and look at the budget that's here, do you have any feelings in relationship to that on how, or any testimony to that, I guess?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. I've been tracking it. I have not looked at perhaps maybe the most recent language. I believe that everything that we have been doing was significantly more than what was already required. And so as far as making sure that we are setting up homeowners for success and being able to refinance out of that contract was never, at least in the early readings of that language, was not an issue for us or that program.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sir, in your dealings with folks buying homes, is it a guideline? I know we've talked about this 30% of income. Is that kind of the guideline you use in terms of payments that the folks can afford when they purchase a home?
We do. We still strive to make sure that homeowners are not paying more than 30% of their income for housing. There are times, and lenders in the state have from time to time allowed higher percentages. And for us, if we do go over that, we want to make sure that we're looking at the whole picture. We're looking at perhaps an opportunity for the household's income to go up, those kinds of things to make sure that we're comfortable in that. Again, key to our work is not only ensuring that those mortgage payments are affordable, but making sure that we're supporting the homeowner throughout that homeownership experience. The one thing we've noted, if I may offer, is at least over the last 2 or 3 years, I'm guessing 80 to 90% of our homeowners are paying less today in their principal interest and taxes payment than what they were paying in rent, and that part of that is just the shift in the market.
Any other questions? Great. Well, thank you so much for your testimony, and we appreciate that. We're going to go on then next to Darielle. Damon from the... And looks like Liz Coppola as well. Liz Coppola as well. And I know you have several hats. I think of you as Homes for All when you come and sit there. I'm grateful for all your work. Go ahead and introduce yourself with your specific titles.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I appreciate being able to sit here again. You might be a little tired of seeing me. And I think I can speak for both of us in saying that. But I think we actually wanted to... Sorry, my name is Darielle Dannon, and I am the co-chair of the Homes for All Coalition. What I have for the committee is I have the logos of sort of all the folks who are we'll go both ways. All of the folks who are involved at this point with Homes for All, and I think when we started the session, we had 40. I'm pleased to say that we have 70 organizations who are who have signed on to the campaign, and you'll be interested to note that it includes schools, it includes the Nurses Association, it includes SEIU Healthcare, and I think that's a real recognition that housing is really important for a lot of different things, including especially school success. And I think, the members of this committee are very well aware of how tied those two things are to each other. So what I wanted to share is that we're just very appreciative of all the hard work that's been done by this committee. We're really appreciative of this budget. I know it's been really difficult. We recognize that the committee originally understood that the budget was just going to include MHFA programs, and since then it's sort of expanded to include a number of other things that we didn't realize weren't going to be paid through other sources. The reason I pass out the sheet, though, is just to remind the committee how many folks have united around the great need that's out there. And I think the reason that they've united and the reason that Homes for All started in the first place is that we really feel like we're in a time of crisis. When the population that is most likely to be homeless is our youth and children, And when over half of Minnesotans who are in rental housing are paying more than they can afford for rent, that we are in a time of crisis. And we really appreciate the budget, and we appreciate all the hard work that this committee has done, but I think it's good to just remember that there is still, as you know, a lot of heavy lifting that needs to happen. And I'll remind you one more thing before I, actually two more things very quickly. First, that we did a study in 2006 that really looked at what all the comprehensive needs were throughout the entire state. And that study said that we needed to put $568.7 million towards constructing housing and towards supporting individuals so that they were paying less, so that they were paying what they could afford towards rent. And that was a 2006 study. So we haven't, it's a fairly, as you can imagine, a very complicated thing to do a study like that. So I'm just assuming that we probably have a greater need than that at this time. But I do want to, again, appreciate so much the work that this committee has done and the interest that this committee has taken to ensuring that both the housing, so the building of the housing, and the services, so those DHS programs that are in your budget, those are absolutely essential to making affordable housing work. And in my other hat, when I wear my other hat, I work at the Metropolitan Consortium of Community Developers, and Jeff Washburn is, and his organization are one of our members. And when our members put in applications to Minnesota Housing to be able to build projects, you cannot imagine how much time and energy they go into finding the service dollars to go with the building. And vice versa, there sometimes are dollars or maybe donated land, and we can't find the money to build the building. So it's really important to just reiterate the importance of those two things together, that we cannot really have an impact on the housing needs in our state without having both the bricks and mortar and the services. And so again, I'll just sum up by saying there's a lot of need, and I think everyone feels like this is a really good point, and we're really appreciative. We're really happy to have increases in these budgets, but if there are opportunities to go farther, we would be honored to work with the members of this committee to help make those things happen.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Liz Coppola, and the hat I'm wearing today is that of Executive Director of the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless. We're a statewide coalition of 150 homeless service providers and allied organizations. Like most of you, our members have been on a roller coaster these past couple of weeks, elated at first that our hard work together resulted in a $22 million target for this committee that would allow you to make significant progress on our affordable housing crisis. Then, we learned that leadership intended any related homeless service funding to come from your same target. And now, it seems they've added ending sex trafficking to your responsibilities as well. I'd like to take a few minutes to explain why, even with this enormous burden and the difficult decisions ahead, it makes sense to invest in homeless services. Here's what we know. We'll be spending money on these same people either way. Without housing stability, homeless children and youth cost more money both now and long into the future. The Minnesota Department of Education spent over $8 million last year alone transporting homeless school children from the nearest shelter to the school they were attending at the time they became homeless. We do this because it's required by federal law. The idea is that since homelessness is so disruptive and often temporary, homeless children benefit from some level of continuity in their education. This $8 million per year amount is only half of what we seek in the Homeless Youth Act to provide housing and supports our teens need to grow into productive adulthood. While the research has done a comprehensive study on the return on investments for families in supportive housing, they found that for every dollar we invest, the state saves $1.44. Somebody said this is like putting a dime in a gumball machine and getting your gum and your money back. This return on investment looks at just the adults in families. It looks at their higher wages, lower incarceration rates, lower chemical dependency. This conservative estimate, returning $1.44 for every dollar invested, does not include potential savings from improved health, reduced emergency room use, or inpatient hospitalizations, or any child-related outcomes. Certainly, we know child-related outcomes are important. And we know that children and youth make up half the homeless population in Minnesota. The Department of Education reported last year that 79% of Minnesota third graders are proficient in math. 79%. This number for homeless third graders, 33%. By eighth grade, the number drops to 16% for homeless students. Homeless children are three times more likely to have emotional and behavioral problems, four times more likely to have delayed development, and nine times more likely than housed children to repeat a grade. Further, we know adverse childhood experiences affect lives long into adulthood. We know what works in serving over 10,000 Minnesotans who are homeless each night. Over the past 18 months, as Dariel mentioned, housing and homeless advocates have come together around targeted investments in both housing and services. With your stretched target, you're able to fund only a fraction of the need. You've balanced it as well as anyone could, but we want to work with you to find more money. As the committee and the legislature now charged with the responsibility of caring for the homeless and building strong communities with enough housing to fund a growing workforce, we think you shouldn't have to choose between serving a 13-year-old homeless girl who will have to trade sex for rent and a 13-month-old who is homeless with his mother because it is safer on the streets than in an abusive relationship and they have no other housing options. These are false choices. We're looking for options to give you more ability to do your difficult work. None of them perfect, but perhaps some of them better and more cost-effective than allowing children and youth to live on the streets. For example, perhaps we could look at taxing tattoos and piercings, which we think would raise the full amount of the Homes for All ask. Or, recently, some states have instituted a tax on patrons of strip clubs to fund sexual assault and trafficking programs. Repealing the tax break for horses would bring in $2.5 million. For fraternal benefit societies, $10 million. The trade-in allowance for used cars, $14 million. TV commercials, $2 million. Carnival prizes, $400,000. None of these are perfect. All of them would need some work to make sure there aren't unintended consequences. But I'm hopeful we can work together in a bipartisan basis to find the investments we need to reduce the far bigger costs of managing the homeless crisis. Thank you for your consideration. Thank you for your great work this session. As advocates, we look forward to working with you to continue to get the job done. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dan and Ms. Coppola. Any questions from committee members? Representative Anderson.
Thank you again, Madam Chair. For the testifier, you're talking about rental assistance for families or for school-age kids. And in the bill, we've allocated $1 million for that that area. Does that address the entire need, or how big an area is that you would see that we could do more there?
We could definitely do more. Madam Chair and Representative, I have to get my spreadsheet on how much. I know we were seeking $4.5 million for rental assistance. I'll have to get back to you on how many that serves, but it's just a fraction of the need. But we think it is excellent excellent to provide. We love the rental assistance program to provide housing stability.
Thank you. Anybody else? Representative Radinovich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't so much have a question as a comment. Would that be permissible?
Of course.
Thank you. I came on this committee without a whole lot of background in housing and without a whole lot of expectations as to what it was I might learn or what I might get out of this committee. And I have to say that, throughout the few months that we've been working on this bill and throughout the few months that I've become more familiar with your coalition, I have to, admire the great work you do and also think to myself how blessed I've been to grow up in a family that has the ability to support me when I needed it and indeed supports other members of my family. The Lutheran Social Services brought a young gentleman from my district a few weeks ago to my office. He was a homeless youth in my area. And in rural Minnesota, sometimes I don't think that we quite understand that those problems affect our community. They tend to be a little bit less visible. And as I read through this list of places that some of these homeless youth might stay, if they aren't able to, have a house of their own or some place to call their own, I see in Brainerd they say things like friends' apartments, downtown on the stairs, in a fish house. at a campground in Duluth. It's they walk around all night. They sleep on a bus or on a friend's couch. They're staying with older men in exchange for sex. And I think about an experience that I had recently at the elementary school in my district, where I was there talking to a third grade class, and I was explaining more so about the education piece. That I work on the finance committee there as well. And I was saying that the state government, we pass the bills that pay for education, we pass the bills that pay for transportation. And a little third grade girl raised her hand and she said, Do you pay for people that don't have houses? And I took a question in stride and I said, well, you know, I actually do work on the housing committee and we're working on some very important things right now. And she said, well, please, you know, make sure that you do, because my mother and I, we don't have a house. Mm-hmm. And if that weren't heart-wrenching enough, there were then two other children in a third grade class in my community who raised their hand and said that they were homeless and that they'd either been kicked out because they couldn't afford to stay there. One was kicked out because of something that their father had done. And it was at that moment that a lot of the work on this committee sort of came around full circle for me, and I understood why, even though we have a very small part of this budget here, that the work we do is important. And I sure hope that, and I know that this committee has worked hard on addressing the needs of the Homes for All Coalition and all the partner organizations to the best of our ability, and I know that we've had some unique constraints placed on us by, you know, members of our own team, but, you know, I'm proud of the work that we've done here. I sure hope that we can fight for every dime that we can through the process, through the conference committee. And I really want to thank the members of the Homes for All Coalition and all the partner organizations out there, the advocates that have been working on this very important work. And I hope that we're able to see it through for you guys. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ditto. Ms. Koppel, and then we should move on to the other witnesses.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Anderson. I have an answer, I think. The department was projecting that a $2 million in rental assistance targeted towards children would house between 115 and 135 families for 24 months. So half of that would be, you know, 60 to 70 families will be served with the $1 million. You do still have, in this bill, you have additional funds for the Housing Trust Fund rental assistance. This is, you're carving out $1 million of it to be dedicated towards these highly mobile students. But we're projecting that the base plus the increase will serve 3,675 families. And so it will make a tremendous difference. We have still, as we mentioned, 10,000 folks every night. And so we have a mix. But when we came together with this request, we thought targeting this towards children will make a significant step forward. So thank you for your support.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Next witness, Amber, is this right? Oh. Steve Horsfield. Is that correct? From Simpson Housing Services?
Yes.
Steve, welcome to the committee.
That's fine. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Stephen Horsfield. I'm the Executive Director at Simpson Housing Services. We are a member organization of the Homes for All campaign. Our agency serves as a part of the crisis response system in Minnesota for Minnesotans experiencing homelessness, providing emergency shelter, transitional housing, and permanent supportive housing to families and individuals who have experienced homelessness. There's some messages here, some themes that we'll be carrying through the testimony, I believe, this morning. While we do see many indicators of economic recovery, we continue to be in crisis around homelessness. The most recent data in Minnesota shows a 27% increase in the number of people in shelter over 2009. Tonight in Hennepin County alone, we have about 1,400 adults and about 800 children in shelter. Each week at Simpson Housing, we see as many as 130 people show up for our shelter lotteries when there are as few as 10 beds open. In March, we had to revamp our family housing screening process because we were receiving 125 calls in a day for one open slot in our transitional housing program for families. While these numbers can be overwhelming, what's more frightening to me is imagining where we would be without critical programs like shelter and transitional housing and the impact that's had over the past several years. Nonprofits, faith communities, businesses, and local units of government have responded with progressive and innovative solutions to address rising homelessness in our community. With effective tools, we've assisted thousands of Minnesotans find stability and move into permanent housing. Simpson Housing Services receives transitional housing funding from the state of Minnesota and supports innovations to these funds. Over the last few years, we have been focused on creating services that meet the needs of very young children and homeless families. These services include building parenting skills, detecting developmental delays, and connecting families with intervention services for those delays. Through our over 30 years' experience with homeless families, we have seen too often that children who've experienced homelessness are more likely to experience developmental delays and are entering school far behind their stably housed peers. Families have been overwhelmingly receptive to the extra support we have been providing. We have been supportive of the bipartisan Visible Child Work Group that has been convening with the task of finding ways to make the needs of homeless children more visible in our community and create a comprehensive state plan to improve the well-being of homeless children. We presented the work group with information about how much the difference our work with young children and their parents has made in a short time. We also know that we have been lucky to find private funding to help to pay for this innovative service, but we need the state's investment. There's a major strategic advantage and return on investment to spending on shelter and transitional housing. We can proactively invest in these strategic tools, or we can reactively spend much more on expensive public services like emergency room care, jail, detox, and prison. I know that this committee faces an extremely challenging task of allocating funds among many worthwhile programs providing critical services. As you are making these determinations, please be aware of the breadth and depth of the impact of investment on crisis response services for people experiencing homelessness. For the Minnesotans we serve, housing is health care. Housing is education support. Housing is community building. Housing is employment stability. It's a better way to do government services. Shelter and transitional housing are programs that work. On behalf of the families, children, and individuals that we serve, I strongly urge this committee to increase investment in responding to the crisis of homelessness. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Questions or comments from committee members? Okay, well, why don't you stay there a minute, and we'll go on to Ms. Dacus.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Amber Backus, and I'm here on behalf of Hearth Connection. We, too, are a member of the Homes for All Coalition and appreciate the increases for the continuum of housing and homeless services contained in the DE7, but hope we could do more to serve some of our most vulnerable Minnesotans. And since this committee is not as familiar with some of the DHS programs that are now funded in the bill, I do have a handout and just wanted to share a little bit of background with you about Hearth Connection and the work we're doing with the long-term homeless. Hearth Connection is a statewide intermediary nonprofit organization that supports 28 community nonprofits and 3 tribes to deliver supportive housing to people who have experienced long-term homelessness. And this is statutorily defined as being homeless for at least a year or having a minimum of 4 episodes of homelessness over 3 years. Hearth Connection marries funding between the Housing Trust Fund in Minnesota Housing and the DHS Long-Term Homeless Supportive Services Fund to annually serve over 1,200 people through 3 regional collaboratives in 34 counties, and there is a map of those counties in your packet. Hearth Connection started as a research-based pilot project in 1999 to study whether this model of supportive housing could stabilize homeless individuals, and we proved it did. Our success informed the state's business plan to end long-term homelessness, which was implemented in 2005 and received bipartisan support from the legislature and Governor Pawlenty. Our data-driven model shows that providing housing with intensive, wraparound case management services, we can stably house Minnesotans who, before entering our program, have experienced on average 7.1 years of homelessness, but they're individuals with histories of homelessness of over 20 to 30 years. And we can help them increase their personal functioning and achieve better health outcomes. Our program participants include single adults and veterans, families with children and unaccompanied youth, and these folks typically have multiple barriers to housing. 63% have mental health disabilities, 51% have chemical dependency, and 56% are dually diagnosed with these two. 32% have a chronic health condition, 16% have a physical disability, and there are those that have experienced trauma and abuse, especially those children. While homeless, these individuals and families find themselves caught in a vicious cycle of using state-subsidized costly crisis services, as you've already heard, systems like the emergency room, detox, jails, and inpatient mental health to manage their crises without improving their well-being. As we just heard, housing is a social determinant to health. Without housing, people will not stabilize their health. And to the extent that the state has goals to reduce unnecessary utilization of health services, improve health outcomes, lower school mobility for children, and reduce risk factors for poor children, and honor our veterans, supportive housing must be part of the equation. And again, while we appreciate the proposed increases in both the Housing Trust Fund and the Long-Term Homeless Supportive Services Fund, we were hoping to do better. Last session, the Long-Term Homeless Supportive Services Fund was the only homeless program to lose funding, receiving a 16% cut, and that was after making up some of the losses with some TANF dollars. This dramatically impacted some of the most vulnerable households we served, as they received less of the supports needed to keep them stably housed, and Christine Martin of WADA will be following up after me and can speak to the negative effects of the cuts on the families with children they serve. But furthermore, the cut created an imbalance between the Housing Trust Fund and the Long-Term Homeless Supportive Services Fund, so that while rental vouchers are available, we didn't have the corresponding supportive services dollars to utilize them. And when we had people successfully exit our program last biennium, we left 45 slots unfilled despite an increasing need. And unfortunately, this bill only exacerbates that inequity, as the Housing Trust Fund is increased further while the Long-Term Homeless Supportive Service Fund is not yet made whole from last year's cuts. As part of the Homes for All Coalition, we are seeking parity between funding the Minnesota Housing and the DH Homeless Services so we can get the best return on investment out of limited state resources. And furthermore, the Long-Term Homeless Supportive Service Fund has been able to help leverage federal funds from HUD, Medical Assistance, and the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. With less state funding in the Long-Term Homeless Supportive Services Funds, we are able to pull down less federal dollars to maximize the state's return. This bill is a great start, but we hope we could do more with the committee's increased target. And I thank you for your time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
No one's questions from committee members. Maybe just one for me, which
sure.
is, I think maybe one thing that you might have not heard me mention earlier, but we are providing more than an 18% increase to that program, to your program that you're talking about in this program, and it's in the base. So.
No, we are, so Madam Chair, we are extremely appreciative of that, and we know we are doing what you can, so it is appreciated.
Okay. All right, Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Ms. Backus, your program does good things, and looking at your map again, I have to ask, there's kind of a big area of central and western Minnesota that doesn't receive the services. What's available out there?
Unfortunately, nothing at this time, Madam Chair and Representative Anderson. Last biennium was when the Department of Human Services put out an RFP to counties for these dollars, and because the funding was not only held whole, it was cut, there wasn't additional funding to expand the program to other services. But I know that big swath of central Minnesota was very interested in taking advantage of these dollars because they've seen the need of their communities and were looking for relief from the burden of not doing anything on their systems. I know in particular that there was a 9-county collaborative organized around St. Cloud that had put in a bid for about $1.2 million, I think is the correct number, that wasn't able to be honored. And I know the Moorhead area was looking to join that Northwestern collaborative with some other counties. Wilmer, too, has seen an increased need. And again, unfortunately, with the cuts we experienced, there weren't the resources available. And Madam Chair, I'd like to add, as I understand it, I think until the fund is made whole from its the $12.8 million that was two bienniums ago, I don't think DHS is interested in expanding it beyond the current populations that are being served.
Okay, any other comments, questions? Thank you so much. Thank you, both of you. We are running kind of short on time, so I'm going to ask those who are following to try to make your comments a little bit briefer, please. Otherwise, we won't get through everybody. So I think we originally told you 3 minutes, and we haven't asked anybody to leave after 3 minutes. But if you could try to hold your testimony now to maybe 2 minutes, that would be really helpful so we can hear from all the different folks. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Thank you also to all the testifiers that have been here this morning and will come behind me. My name is Christine Martin, and I am a vice president of the Amherst H. Wilder Foundation here in St. Paul. Wilder is a member of the Homes for All Coalition and supports full funding for the continuum in order to provide housing stability for all. Wilder has been serving homeless adults and families for over decades. Over time, we have chosen to build our capacity to serve the most challenged yet costly homeless people, those who have been homeless for a very long time through our Quest and Roof programs. As a result, they often require intensive and holistic interventions and supports. Families require longer case management services that focus on stabilization, employment, finances, and education, and issues that you've heard earlier this morning. It is time intensive, but the long-term results are reduced costs to many parts of the system, and of course the short-term results are stabilized housing for very complex families. Due to state cuts 2 years ago, Wilder was forced to cut our program by over $400,000 and currently serve half of what we served in the past. This is counterintuitive when results from the cuts actually eventually increase cost to government services. But thank you for investing in this program. Wilder, Lutheran Social Services, and Catholic Charities joined together this year to champion full funding of $8 million for the Homeless Youth Act. We believe that this funding will help the state reduce youth homelessness through innovation and expansion of prevention and early intervention services, shelter and stabilization, transitional and outreach services, and the importance that these youth have a trusting relationship with an adult. Our advocacy efforts have given you lots of facts and figures, dollars spent, savings lost, profiles of the young people, and estimates of how many young people sleep on the street every night, where they sleep, and what happens to them with at least one night on the street. But this doesn't just happen to those children, as spoken earlier this morning. It is happening to our children. It is shocking, it is unacceptable, and it completely contradicts the values and responsibilities that we have as adults to the young people that we raise. I have dedicated my entire career to public service, first at Hennepin County and now at the Wilder Foundation, working to give kids a chance at a successful life. I'm on the board at the Bridge for Youth, I coach track and field, and I also tutor at a juvenile facility. And I'm a parent like many of you, trying really hard to give my kids a chance at a successful life. I feel a sense of urgency that we cannot afford to lose even one more kid because we choose to defer decisions like are in front of you this morning. One of the greatest threats to our civilized society is that we accept homelessness as inevitable and that we admit that over 2,500 homeless youth across this state don't deserve what our children deserve and get, a place to call home and a chance at a successful life. We can do this, we know how to do this, and we must do this. And when we drive home tonight, or some night soon, maybe there will be no young person sleeping under the bridge that we just drove over, or sleeping in the doorway at the University of Minnesota, or in a parked car, or in a tent. Thank you for your time this morning. Thank you for your support of the Homeless Youth Act.
Allison? Thank you. Would you introduce yourself, please?
Trent Sowell is the next speaker. He came down with a cold that's not going to allow him to speak, and I've been asked to read the speech that he wrote.
Okay.
All right.
And why don't you introduce yourself?
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is James Scott. I'm a supervisor with the Hope Street Runway and Homeless Youth Program.
Thank you.
My name is Trent Sowell, and I would like to talk about the importance of youth homelessness. If you've never been homeless, then you will never understand the hardships and struggles that a boy or girl at the age of 16 would have to go through. And I'm here to share my experience in the hope to shed light on this topic. When I was 15, I moved in with my grandma because my dad has been in jail my entire life, and my mother was unfit to take care of my siblings and I. One day, my grandma and I got into a huge argument, and she called and lied to the police, saying I pushed her when I really didn't. And they didn't believe me, so they took me to juvie for a day. After I was released, I went back home to gather my things, and she told me she did it to teach me a lesson, like she did my mother. So I gathered my things and left, because she didn't want me there, and I was hurt for what she did. From that day forth, I was homeless, sleeping from couch to couch, which was really hard, because of that feeling of having nowhere to go and no one to turn to was really sad. When I was 18, I found out about the shelter Hope Street, which was one of the major turning points in my life. They helped me with everything I could think of, and most importantly, the relationships that I built with the staff was wonderful. My case managers, Alyssa and Jim, also helped me out a lot, and without them, I probably wouldn't have made it this far. During my stay at Hope Street, I was able to graduate high school, and I found out about the host home program. I got accepted into the program, and I met my host parents, John and Bob, and they took me in and gave me the best year that I have ever had. We did everything together, and I finally found a family in them that I never had before. My year was up with them, so I moved into another host home with Christy and Ruth, and I had a pretty good time with them, but it was time for me to finally be on my own. My case manager, Alyssa, found a new program that was opening up called the Scattered Site Housing Program, and I was the first one on the list. Once I got accepted to the program, I felt like one of my dreams had finally come, and I got to meet yet another wonderful case manager named Eric. He helped me on my rigorous search for an apartment. After a two-month search, we finally found a place and I moved in, and since then, I have been the happiest I've been in years. I was also blessed with a great job working as a security officer for the Target City Center, and that was the start of a beautiful life for me. Without the services that helped me, I don't know where I would be today, and that's why it's important that the Homeless Youth Act gets passed
because there's so many homeless youth out there that need support or someone to turn to, and I have friends who are struggling with homelessness. Hopefully my story inspires others to never give up, no matter how hard it gets, or to inspire others to give out a reaching hand to those in need.
Thank you for reading his testimony. I appreciate that.
I don't want to cut into any of Allison's time. I was Trent's case manager when he first came into the program. There's a part of this story that Trent left out that I think would be really important to talk about, and I can keep it as short as possible.
Okay.
All right. When I met Trent on school outreach, I brought him into the shelter. I almost kicked Trent out within the first month of him being there because he wasn't showing up at night. He would come in the mornings, take a shower, go off to school, come back early in the evening, sleep, and then head out for the evening. And we felt like that wasn't a good use of the bed. Maybe we needed to give it away if he had a safe place to go at night. I ended up talking to Trent about where he was going at night. And his grandmother was one of the victims of that tornado that hit North Minneapolis. The tornado hit it and broke all the windows. None of the doors closed, and there was no electricity. And so at night, it was completely dark. Trent was going there in the middle of the night, every night. The woman who had kicked him out and put him out on the streets, he could not leave her alone in her time of need. Trent's story is not that different from a lot of these kids, and I think it's important to talk about that because I think there's a misconception about how the kids that are out on the street are runaways. These kids have incredible loyalty to the families and the communities that just simply can't support them. And even when they can't put them up for the night, they still go back and take care of them.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. If you'll introduce yourself, please.
Good morning, Madam Chair and the members of the committee. My name is Allison Wesley, and I'm a formerly homeless youth. I want to thank you for taking the time to listen to why it's so important to fund the Homeless Youth Act. I first became homeless when I was 14. I grew up in the suburbs, so I had never been in Minneapolis. My mom dropped me off at the bridge, and I vividly remember the first time I was downtown Minneapolis with nowhere to go. I felt so lost, so out of place. I felt like everyone was looking at me. I felt so far beneath the people that were walking down the street next to me. I saw myself in the people who were downtown begging for money. And I saw the disgusted looks that people gave them, and I felt like people were looking at me the same. I didn't know where anything was, and I didn't have any money to buy anything so I could sit inside somewhere, so I just walked downtown. After that first day, walking became all I could do and everything I did do. Even at night, I had nowhere to go. It was always the scariest at night. When it gets dark, everyone is your enemy. You can't even trust the police. Even if you find somewhere to lay down, you can't close your eyes just in case. I connected with other young people like me at every agency I went to. They became like my family. We did everything for each other. Youth Link, The Bridge, Avenues, and many other organizations helped me get out of that scary reality. Today, I'm happy to report that I'm 22 and me and my three kids have our own place. And I work two jobs. One of my jobs is that a youth ambassador at Youth Link. And as a youth ambassador, I witnessed other young people going through things very similar to what I went through. My heart hurts for them as soon as they walk out the door when we close. I know that they don't have anywhere to go for the night because there aren't enough shelter beds for the increasing amount of youth who are homeless. Sometimes all I can do is give them a bus token so they can ride the bus. I believe that the state of Minnesota can do better than a bus token. I'm grateful that the Homeless Youth Agencies exist throughout this state, and that there are people like you who are willing to understand the reality homeless youth face every day. I am also grateful that you are willing to change that reality so youth facing homelessness can have a brighter future and won't have to walk through life feeling scared and alone.
Thank you very much for your testimony. We really appreciate that you came here and told us your story. Any comments, questions from committee members? Thank you all very much. We're going to go on to the next witness, David McGee. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm new at this, so you have to excuse me. My name is David McGee, and I'm the Executive Director for Build Wealth Minnesota, a local nonprofit. It's been around about 10 years, and We have been partnering with a number of organizations, including City of Lakes, who was Jeff Washburn, who was here earlier. And we had piloted 5 years ago a transformative program we call the Family Stabilization Plan. And this particular program is a long-term, two-year approach of helping families to transform them from some really hard times and putting them in a position to be sustainable homeowners. Many of these families that come to us initially have rates of about 50% of their gross income going towards rents for the most part. And so we've been transforming most of them to become homeowners. At 35% of the families that are going through our program are actually getting into homeownership, and at rates of 21% of their gross income through this transformative approach. Today I just wanted to let you know I'm very supportive of the new language and the priority to closing the disparity gap. Our program primarily serves people of color, primarily African Americans, and as we know, the economic times have really put havoc on a lot of families, especially in housing. And every time we go through tough economic times, people of color tend to go through the times even worse. And so we lost a lot of wealth for these families over time. And so I'm very thankful of the support I'm getting from some of the members of this committee for future legislation, and really looking that the priority that's given to closing the disparity gap, that future legislation and future funding that are going through these particular budgets will actually go to help support this long-term process of sustainable home ownership for people of color. We believe, and we've been seeing, that it's been bringing in additional revenue. We see that we've had a review done in the social return on investment with families going through our program is $12 to every $1 spent. And we're seeing that nationwide, it's about 30% of families that have gone through this long-term approach are seeing no lates in their mortgages over 60 days. And our program is seeing about 95% of the families that have been going through this long-term approach of 2 years are showing no 30-day lates on their mortgages over the last 4 years of our program. And I want to just thank you for your continued support in housing, Build Wealth, and does support Homes for All, and very supportive of home ownership centers training. But we just believe that we'd like to see more support for the long-term approach of 2 years, this hand-holding that's going to be necessary to make home ownership more sustainable. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McGee. And maybe I'll ask Suwala Phillips. I know you're a team together to testify, and then if there's questions, we'll take it after. Thank you,
Madam Chair and committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to testify and for your service to our state and to our country. My name is Sue Watlow Phillips. I'm the president and CEO of Integrated Community Solutions. I'm also a founding member of MICA, the Metro Interfaith Council on Affordable Housing, and honorary board member of the National Coalition for the Homeless, and one of the founding board members of the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless. Our mission is that everyone, without exception, has a decent, safe, and affordable, accessible place to call home. As people of faith, we believe that how you treat the least of these is how we treat our God. We are commanded in our faith to love others as ourselves, to treat others the same way we'd want to be treated in that same situation. I've witnessed firsthand the dramatic increase in homelessness here in this country as I've worked in homelessness and housing for 42 years. I've been a homeless and housing and social service providers, as well as a retired psychologist and an advocate on the state and federal level, working with many of you here, and helped write many of the state and federal homeless legislation that, with many of these wonderful people that you've already heard from and their predecessors, and have been very blessed in that. Homelessness is often blamed on the individual person, that it's a personal problem. And our media and some of our very expensive data systems often tries to prove that to us. The truth is, that's wrong. And it's a lie. We all have problems. Yet not all of us are experiencing homelessness. If you have money, you can get into housing. If you don't, you can't. Now, I've experienced this both with wealthy people as a psychologist and working with very wealthy people that have very, very many more problems than a lot of the people that I've worked with that have experienced homelessness. And I've also experienced it personally, because I spent 10 weeks in treatment at Hazleton with other people that were also struggling with chemical health issues, that were medical doctors and other professionals. We had money. Those things did not cause us to become homeless. Trying to estimate, one of the things I encourage you to do is, real quick in your head, try to estimate, if you didn't have a paycheck, how many months would it take before you wouldn't be able to make your rent or mortgage payment? That's how close you are to being at risk of not staying in your housing. Research, national research says, at least some of it says, that 30 to 60% of the American population is at risk of losing their home within 1 to 3 months of losing their pay. That hasn't always been true. I'm older than a lot of folks in this room. Some of you are about my age. Grew up in the 50s and the 60s. We didn't know homelessness like that then. I headed to the University of Minnesota in the early 70s. I was training for the Olympics. And I worked loading semi-trucks at UPS at night. I paid for my $125 a month apartment right by the U, which included utilities, except for electricity, which was about $5 a month. And I paid for my college, no student loans. I had a car. I had spending money. If you worked hard, you could pay your bills. That's not true for many of our hardworking people in this state and across this country. Now, you've seen this piece of paper. You were given this information. You've already seen some of the wilder information. Largest growing number of folks becoming homeless, elderly, my age and older. The other highest growing is youth. That was the first page in your packet. The next piece in your packet, and I'm not going to go through this, but many of you have asked for data on your county, so that's why I put this together. Your yellow packet is the latest data from the National Low-Income Housing Coalition, and Barbara Poppe, who's the head of the U.S. Interagency, has a little piece on the back of that. Basically, what it costs, if you want to be living in affordable housing in Minnesota, you have to have, it'll cost you $836 for a two-bedroom apartment. That means you need to be making $16.08 an hour, 40 hours a week, 52 weeks a year. Now, I encourage you when you go home this weekend, if you have the chance to go home, look in your local newspaper. Open it up to the want ads. See how many of the jobs in your community are looking for people that are going to pay $16 or more. Probably not a whole lot. The lack of livable income is the primary reason people become homeless. Now, many of you had the opportunity, and I thank Karen and the folks in this room, for helping do the tour of shelters and homeless programs. Now, while you were all doing that, I was over at the Capitol testifying in the HHS committee on another bill. And that bill, I was telling folks, this will prevent the majority of family homelessness. And how we do that is by doubling the MFIP grant, public assistance grant, which has not had a raise in 27 years, as well as continuing emergency assistance. None of our public assistance programs pay enough money for people to afford housing. Now, the sixth section, which I'm not going to go through in great detail because you already skimmed through it probably, is research that just came out from the State Demographer's Office that demonstrates the impact of the disparities that are happening in our society, especially to people of color and to our American Indian Indigenous people. I am so happy that this has been included into a priority within all the legislation. What is clearly said in this report, and this is only a portion of the report, and I encourage you to look at the last couple pages especially, is that being in poverty, we have a situation where people are having housing instability, poor school performance, employability difficulties, poor health, and homelessness. We can save, as people have said here, incredible resources, reducing emergency responses and other services by investing resources more wisely to allow people to meet their own needs. Finally, and I know that you've already stayed longer than you wanted, we know how to invest in our state, and we have done that very well in home ownership. Unfortunately, we have incredible disparity in our home ownership with people of color and indigenous people. But if you look at the very last page in your packet, which is a green sheet of paper, you will see that one of our programs that we know how to do very well in investing is mortgage interest deduction. This is just one of several of our subsidy programs for home ownership. In this next biennium, we will spend over $679 million in the tax expenditure budget on this subsidy program. That's seven times more than this bill that you're talking about today. So as a conservative woman, I believe that we need to be fiscally responsible and protect all of those who are alive. We need to put both the tax expenditure budget as well as the appropriation budget that you're talking about today on the table and make the structural changes by investing in our people's lives to a level that allows them to become productive adults and be all God created them to be. Now, my pledge is to God to love him and to love and treat others as myself. I also have a pledge to the United States, to this republic, not to my party, and not to just doing what's best for me. I have a pledge to this country, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. If we, the people all in this room, in this people's house today, will act on that pledge of allegiance to this country, we together, with God's blessing, will bring Minnesota and America home. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions or comments from committee members? Thank you. Thank you so much. We have one more witness who's asked to speak, Jean Lee. Is there anybody else in the audience who wants to speak today? We're just going to take a couple more minutes here with Ms. Lee. We didn't have you on the list earlier, but we'll give you a couple minutes, and then members, we're going to go back to the bill. Welcome to the committee.
Yes. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you. I'm Jean Lee, President and Executive Director of Children's Hope International. R&R Family Centers, which are shelters, transitional housing, and permanent housing, and I head the Asian Pacific American Housing Consortium, which is made up of over 20 service provider organizations covering a large range of services that are both cultural and bilingual. In particular, I want to focus on the bill as far as, oh, I should give you some background so that you know in what capacity I'm talking. I'm also been a prior realtor, banker, lender. I still do legal advocacy, certified housing counselor, educator, and trainer, and I also do development. I work with, or our organizations work with people with disabilities, domestic violence, discrimination, seniors, and many others. So on the bill, we like how they have changed some of the different sections, especially like in subdivision 3, where they are inclusive as far as reducing the disparity gap for communities of color, indigenous people, and those groups that are working to provide services to members of the community. But we also believe that it should also be in other sections, which are subdivision 5, because we do have some, even now turning into court cases, where families are becoming homelessness because minorities are being targeted for various reasons and being forced out of the communities. In subdivision 7, as far as rehabilitation and debt restructuring, and that's the reason I gave my background, we have the nonprofit organizations of color who provide holistic services that go beyond what government agencies, HRAs, and some of the other nonprofits do as far as helping the client. And so this is why we also wanted to talk as far as when they refer to nonprofits in 5.24 as being also included in that. And then in subdivision 8, when they talk about rehabs, we have several court cases now where we're trying to access rehabilitation or rehab funds for both rentals and homeowners who, and they've turned into court cases. They're really preventable, but again, it's targeting these communities of color where systems are being used against them for the reasons they are, and their only hope is right now coming to some of the advocacy organizations specific to the cultural communities. So this is why we're also asking that provisions be made because of what they're experiencing there. And I don't want to get into all the different cases and scenarios that could be for later if you so want
right.
that.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions, comments from committee members? Okay, committee members, thank you. And I want to thank all the testifiers who came before us. You've done a lot of work, and I just want to make one initial comment, which is I couldn't agree with you all any more than that we wish we had additional dollars, and we know that this is not enough. In fact, I think I spoke at the beginning of our housing committee when we started talking about some of the need. We know that just to meet the need and just in terms of the public housing part of the state budget, we probably have to have $400 million just for repairs and renovations. That's just, and it's a very, we have a very small portion in here that we're able to provide. But I think we're on the way, and I just wanted to make sure that, you know, that, again, as many of you did point out, we are trying very hard, and this is not the last stop for this bill. We do hope that by the time we get into conference committee, that there will be some additional dollars for us to spend on the especially on the dollars that we transferred to the other programs that are not in the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. So I want to just say one other thing. In talking with the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency recently, one of the important things that I'd like to acknowledge is that they do have within their rules and regulations efforts to cover the whole state to distribute the housing resources statewide, and I think they do a pretty good job on that. We had some testimony on that the other day. And they do have existing regulations that deal with the racial disparities. I want to acknowledge that. It's in this bill because we want it to be in the statute and make sure that it goes on and is continued into the future, and that it's always in front of us and in any future legislators that we need to deal with what are really deep disparities in how our housing opportunities are in our state. So with that, members, I'm open this up for any discussion from committee members. We will be voting on this bill today. There were no amendments submitted beyond the author's amendment. Representative Moran.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just would like to say that first I just want to thank the Home from All, just that awesome work that you guys did to come together to do the work we need to do for the great need in our state is huge. We know the issues and the problem that many families are facing is beyond the comprehension of what we would ever like to see. But you did a fantastic job of just coming together and working at peace on a very comprehensive comprehensive way. But I also like to just say thank you to the members here in the housing, because what we had to do with the funding that we had available was a really, really hard task. Not only did we have to work with an initial budget, but we was given additional pieces to include in that budget. So just my hat off to one, the chair, who was just really, really great at bringing us together to look at how we can best work with the money that we had to really, allocate funds for the different pieces that was in that was included for our projection. So again, just for membership, for leadership, and all for those who came before us to speak, just thank you for the work that you do. You know, and it's really, really important that we have strong advocates who see the need, but also who are responding to that need. So hats off to everyone.
Thank you, Representative Moran. Representative Isaacson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to just take a moment to acknowledge the polite frustration we hear in the audience and the people that are testifying that it's appreciated that there was a significant increase. But that we all understand that it's not what needs to happen. It isn't enough to make what needs to happen happen. And, you know, there's, unfortunately, the political reality is of a much bigger budget and a speaker that needs to manage several moving targets makes this difficult. I would say that it was the work that Representative Chairwoman Clark and others did that got the speaker to see some of the importance and make the push where the speaker did, and I think that was a very positive step forward. At the same time, you know, for those of you that are on the front lines and know where that dollar is going to stop and where the need is going to begin again and how that doesn't reach it, I know that isn't much of a solace when you're trying to do the right thing. And I share that frustration, and You know, I know that I speak for Joe that I had no idea I was going to be on this committee when it started, and nor did I know that I would take such an active interest in seeing the successes we could have. But I can tell you that it has formatively shaped the way I will be approaching my time in the legislature, whether it's one more session or more, in an effort to try to make that a better, make this better and make it right, and to do it in the way I have to compliment Homes for All for the work that they've done in terms of understanding how we need to be able to be accountable to outcomes that show we're being productive with the state's money and the taxpayers, and that understanding. You know, I was talking this morning, and why I was late, I apologize. I was at a Merrick looking at their facilities, and we were talking about this, the ROI, as it gets thrown around, return on investment. And I really hope that we take the time in the future to really expand our understanding of what that return means, and it's not just a fiscal return, you know. And I hope that when we move forward, we will. I'm not done fighting for this. If I have to go over to the Senate and yell at some senators or whatever I got to do, I'm not done with this part. But I think that I compliment the chair and Abu and Martha and those that worked hard to put something together that worked with what we had, and I want to see that being a step. But this is far from over, and I'm certainly not done, and I don't think many other committees are done either. So, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Isaacson. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple of kind of housekeeping things. I tried to add up the dollar amount that has been transferred from DHS and those programs. I came to $6.9 million. Is that a correct figure?
No, Mr. Chairman, or Mr. Anderson, I think it's 7.8. Yeah. And it's on the fourth page.
Okay, thank you. Then, Madam Chair, one other question, I guess. The governor's proposal had a $10 million appropriation for workforce housing developments, and I think you've rolled that into a more base funding, but could you comment on the future for housing for workforce development?
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Yes, the challenge program, I'm trying to get up here close enough. The challenge program does receive $10 million, and we, as you may have recalled in the last committee, I had to put an amendment, I introduced you to an amendment that I had to put on today that makes clear that we are doing workforce development in the challenge fund, and so I think that benefits some of the communities that you were concerned about. We also have a couple of additional priorities in there, and I think altogether, hopefully you're satisfied that that's a functioning challenge fund for the purposes that we need. Okay, I'm being pointed out the language that was added is 2.26, which talks about the job growth issue and the mileage and the number of jobs and the lack of housing and so on. There's a number of considerations that the governor provided there, and we restored those to that language along with the additional issues that we wanted that challenge fund to look at.
So the development portion of that, will that be $10.8 million designated for housing development, or how much would go for that?
On
line 3.7, the total number there is 10.8. How much of that would go for the housing development? Is there a set figure?
Chairman.
Representative Anderson, one of the things to understand is that these are competitive grants, and there are probably one of the things about the challenge funds, it just has to have a match. So we're probably looking at more. We're definitely looking at more than the amount of money that's there. Mr. Soderberg, did you want to respond to that question in specific? And if not, were you the one who called my name or no? Okay. Was that okay? Okay. Did you get enough of an answer for that?
So what you're saying is it's not it's going to be a challenge grant program, not a certain amount designated for workforce development housing.
Right.
The way it works
in the challenge program is a competition. People are invited to compete. Communities are invited to compete, and they come forward with their proposal. We could ask if you're interested, some of them from the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, to go through it. But what we do is restore the language that the governor had.
Okay.
And so that includes the issues that have to do with housing density and jobs that are unemployment and that sort of thing. And we also talk, there's some language in here about how far, I think it was a mileage from workplaces to the actual housing. All that's in there again. And we do the additional other priorities that focus on safe and affordable housing for homeless youth and the trafficked women and girls and utilizing the efficiencies of the land trust. So there's not a definite number, and one of the reasons is communities hopefully will respond. I'm not sure exactly what the return on investment is here, the investment from the local communities, but some of them bring quite a bit of money to the their competitive grant. Others less. Just depends.
Okay, Madam Chair, we've enjoyed working with you too as well in this committee, and your target number is bigger. It's an increase, so congratulate you on that, and hope the money is used wisely.
Well, thank you, Representative Anderson, and I really appreciate your comments. You've been great to work with too, and I hope that you all feel like you've had a chance to have an impact on this. We had good questions throughout, and participation in the tour was excellent. I think it opened a few eyes. I heard from some of you that you hadn't had a chance to hear and see some things. So, I might say that next year or over the interim, there's some other places I think we'd like to make sure that everybody gets a chance to visit. I see that Representative Moran and Representative Hertas also have something more to say, so I'll hold my words until then.
Really quick, Madam Chair. I just want to do some clarification. When I spoke about just wanting to thank leadership, I was in reference to you. I just wanted to make that clear that I was speaking on the hard work that you as Chair has done to really make some hard decisions but allocate money in a real way that's going to support the work that needs to be done. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I, too, wanted to echo what Representative Anderson said. I appreciate your sincerity and your passion with regard to this issue and the heartfelt energy in which you put forward to solving some of these problems. And it's not an easy thing, really, to deal with. I think in the back of many of our minds, we would maybe prefer to recognize that maybe these problems really don't exist in Minnesota. But that said, Representative Isaacson, your comments, I really wasn't going to say much, but you invited something that you said, and we've heard some testimony today about wages and how hard you have to work to have a place to stay and 30% of income. And I think it's important to recognize that we can address homelessness on several fronts and not just the work of a committee like this. And Representative Isaacson has come to me and shared some ideas with regard to apprenticeship programs and increasing opportunities for jobs and employment that aren't necessarily in the traditional method, in the traditional way that people would find a way to earn their own personal wealth and place in society. And so with that in mind, I'd really like to invite not just members of this committee, but especially members of your caucus, to really focus on jobs in the economy and not to be treating some of the initiatives that we think share a common goal for all Minnesotans in creating prosperity and opportunities in the job market. And some of the things that we're doing currently are abusing entrepreneurs in this session, are penalizing job creators, and is going to work to the very detriment of the goals that we're pursuing here, and that is to make sure that everybody's got a safe place to live. So I would invite you folks to really look at some of the overall things that we're doing beyond this committee that are really serving to thwart the efforts that are being done in this committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? The bill is before us as amended, and I want to have a few words after that, but let's take a vote on the bill as it is before us. The motion is to pass House File 1344 as amended and to re-refer it to the Committee on Ways and Means. As I said, this will not be the last stop. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails, and the bill is passed. Thank you, members. I want to just take a moment and thank you all. And, wow, it has been a real challenge. It's been a real challenge for us as a committee to look at the budget that we had and to hear from the fabulous work that was done by the Homes for All and the wide coalition of people who came together. I just, this the sheet that has all the different members of that coalition is really exciting to look at. Okay, we'll do that. So I just want to make sure that the advocates and those who agree or disagree have really understood how much we've appreciated their input, and that includes my Republican colleagues. You've been very good. The questions that you ask make me proud that we're a committee together. So I want to take just another moment to thank some of the other people who helped make this committee work this year. And I'm going to start with, and I'm going to ask Nasser. Would you stand up, Nasser? Our page back there. Thank you so much. You did a lot of running around for us. And Jacob Rippon. You've been awesome. Thank you both so much for working with us. You know, we're very fortunate to have I'm very fortunate to have two fabulous staff people who work with me every day on this bill, and so I want to thank Abu Amara, our committee administrator, and Martha Ockenfels Martinez, our wonderful committee legislative assistant. I think we've served us all well, and I hear compliments from people in the community, too. So I just want you both to know that and to know how much you're appreciated. We are going to be losing someone who I can hardly believe is going to happen, Ron Soderberg, who has been our fiscal analyst and just par excellence. Thank you so much, Ron, for your wisdom. Maybe I should say your brilliance at times and your dedication. I mean, you've just always been there when we asked you for questions to help us figure out what to do with this fiscal bill. So thank you so much, and we're just grateful for you. I say the person who we go to a lot, who puts our words together, takes an idea and puts it into legal words, and that's Mary Mullen. Mary, I want to thank you from House Research. You've done a fabulous job. Thank you so much. Andy Pomeroy, who's helped us so much figure out our work that we need to do from the DFL perspective. I really appreciate it. You're such a great writer, and it really helps to read your thoughts about all of these words. On the other side, John Reynolds. Appreciate it. I know you are so busy, and I often wonder what you're doing, because you're moving back and forth talking to your members, so I know you're doing a great job. Thank you. Oh, okay. Well, we have someone in absentia to thank, and I will issue who has helped us at times in the past, one of our pages. So the other persons I want to thank, I mentioned the advocates and just how wonderful you all have all been. Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, Katie Topinka. Where are you? Oh, I didn't see you. Thank you. You've been a great resource, not only to me, but to the other parts of the committee, as is the commissioner Tinkerthal and Tanya Orr. So give them our thanks too. It's been very, very helpful to work with you. You're always forthcoming with any questions we ask, and we did get some good feedback from the agency on this bill. So with that, members, I just want to do one little final piece of business, and I have to make sure that we make the minutes of which date is that? For 4/3/2013, our last minutes are before us. They were in the committee folder. Representative Bly?
Yes, I'd move to approve minutes.
So those minutes are before us for your approval. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor of the motion to approve the minutes signify saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails, and those minutes are adopted. Have we taken care of all our business? Okay, well, again, just thank you, members. It's been great to work with you all, and we have a ways to go. We know that, and I hope that you will help us as we go through this on the floor and get to the governor's desk eventually. So appreciate it again, and this committee is adjourned.